Hey guys, welcome back to Caffeine and Crime. Today is super, super exciting because it is the start of spooky season 2021, and it is a good one, let me tell you. I'm actually really, really excited for the lineup that I have this year. Last year was great as well. There was a lot of places that I don't know. I felt like last year I picked a lot of the places that you would typically find when you search like haunted places. And although some of those are still in this season as well, I wanted to mix it up. I wanted to really go there with this season and do more off the wall ones that maybe you haven't really even heard about. As you can see, today's episode is the Cecil Hotel, so obviously this is one that you're going to find everywhere, especially within the last couple of years. And we're going to get into that. But I promise that this season, we are going to go there with places that you may have heard very little about, but also we are leaving the country. I don't want to spend the entire season just in the United States. There's so many places around the world that are haunted just as much as places that I mentioned here in the US. And I did have, I think, at least one episode last season that was outside of the country, but I think it was like in Canada. But I'm really excited. Spooky season is my favorite time of the year, and I love doing Caffeine and Crime this time of the year because it's almost just like a chill moment. We kind of set true crime aside. Sometimes they get really heavy, and it's nice to kind of set it aside and talk about just spooky, haunted stuff. And it will definitely get you in the fall mood for spooky season and Halloween. So I hope you enjoy this season. I do just want to say here that this is your trigger warning that although I did say we're kind of setting true crime aside, we're still going to be talking about some very true crime-ish stuff. You know, these places are haunted for a reason. Deaths have happened, and there's going to be a lot of other mentions of suicide and deaths and, you know, all kinds of things that may be a little triggering. So I just want to throw that in, that although this is spooky season, this whole season is still going to be filled with a lot of those things as well. But the cool thing about spooky season, though, is that we are focusing more so on the place in general. I'm going to take you guys through the history and break down everything that occurred at these places that make them so haunted and spooky now. We're going to jump in. I did just want to mention one last thing, is that this is a new season, season 6. It's crazy to say that, but we are on season 6, but I have the YouTube. The YouTube is up and running, it still is going. It's been a little slow, I have seen over there. So I would love if you could jump over there and check it out. It would mean so much to me. Subscribe, check out the videos that are posted. If you are newer here, and haven't listened to all of my past episodes, you can actually start watching them and have visuals over on the channel. The full first season is already there. It may be a tad cringy because that was back when we started, and yeah, things have just changed a lot since then. But there is now season 2 is uploading every single week. The date has moved to Tuesdays, so every Tuesday on YouTube, you'll get a new episode from season 2, and it's the serial killer season. So if you're missing your true crime fix from me during spooky season, you can definitely get it there on Tuesdays. And then on Fridays on YouTube, I will be posting last year's spooky season, season 4. So that will all have visuals now. And then, of course, you guys can catch me here on the podcast currently every Tuesday for new spooky season. Now that I filled you guys in, let's jump into this episode. The Cecil Hotel. It's located on 640 South Main Street, downtown Los Angeles. So the Cecil was built in 1924 by William Banks Hanner, Charles L. Dix, and Robert H. Schnapps. It was supposed to be a place for people who were traveling for business or tourists to come and stay. They wanted a nice place where they could come, relax, and stay and enjoy their stay while being there. It was designed by Loy Lester Smith, and constructed by W.W. Patton. The cost of this hotel was $1.5 million to complete. And let me tell you, it's a beautiful, beautiful hotel. Yes, it has aged a lot on the outside, but, and you know, just the surrounding area is not great anymore. But the inside of this place is beautiful. They have a beautiful marble lobby with stained glass windows. They had like potted palm trees. Just everything just looks very elegant. They all invested $2.5 million in the enterprise because they knew that several other hotels that were kind of similar were starting to be built around the downtown area as well. But within 5 years of the Cecil Hotel opening, the United States went into the Great Depression. The hotel flourished as a fashionable destination throughout the 1940s, and then for decades, it just slowly declined. A lot of the blame was put on the nearby area known as Skid Row, as it became more and more populated by homeless people. There's as many as 10,000 homeless people that live just 4 miles from the Cecil Hotel. The Cecil kind of bounced back and forth between like owners, because it was just really hard to upkeep and to be able to own it and also like invest money in it because they weren't making a whole lot with it being so close to Skid Row and the area that it was becoming. Now, when you see videos and footage of the Cecil, the inside, the lobby still looks really pretty, but it's, you can see that it's like more of like a timeless look. It definitely looks a little older, but still like elegant-like. But when you go to like the bedrooms, the actual rooms of this place, it's very grungy, not the typical place you would like to stay. It definitely is more so like out in the middle of nowhere, motel vibes type of ordeal. Every owner kind of took it into their hands to try to make the Cecil better and better each time and attempt to keep it alive. And in 2007, that's what the owners did. They actually just took a portion of the hotel because it's so big. There's 15 floors that have 700 rooms and 301 suites. It's a very big place. Even that did not help this hotel. In 2011, part of the Cecil Hotel was rebranded as Stay on Main. So it's like they took, like when they say like a portion, it's like they almost split it in half, but like not all the way. So they took like a quarter of this hotel and created a brand new lobby and reception area. And they literally just like put a wall down it to where it was just split off. And it's just so weird because it's like you have this grand, nice lobby moment going on with, you know, the Cecil and then all these rooms and space. And I mean, I just feel like, wouldn't you just like block off like some of the top floors and be like, okay, we'll just use that as storage or something? But no. They put down that wall, they made a new reception and little lobby area, and what they tried to do with this was make it very, like, I hate to be one of those people, but, like, young and hip. That's what they were kind of going for with Stay on Main. This was their major, like, attempt to do something with this hotel. It worked for a little while. People were staying there, especially tourists who were on budgets. But in 2014, the hotel was sold to New York City hoteler Richard Bourne for $30 million. And after another New York-based firm, Simon Baron Development, acquired a 99-year ground lease on the property. In 2016, Matt Baron, president of Simon Baron, said he was committed to try to preserve this hotel as much as possible. He loved the historically significant components of the building, such as like the hotel's lobby. He thought it was beautiful, but the company had planned to completely redevelop the interior to, of course, make it look a little bit more like this day and age, but also fix all of the work that had been done in the recent years that just were like half-assed, pretty much. So the hotel did close its doors in 2017 for all of the new work to be done. The work was suspended completely when COVID-19 hit. And since then, we haven't heard much about the Cecil besides, of course, your Netflix documentary. Also, in February of 2017, the Los Angeles City Council voted to deem the Cecil a historic cultural monument because it is representative of an early 20th century American hotel and because of the historic significance of its architect body of work. It is a really beautiful place, and I am glad that they didn't plan on tearing it down. I don't really know what this Matt Barron is thinking about like doing with it now, because I mean they obviously invested a lot of money into this place for it just to kind of sit there. I mean, we're coming up on like a point to where people are going to be traveling again and staying places. So I'm surprised we haven't really seen a lot of work like taking place or like reopening. It is kind of just like up in the air. Like, is it going to reopen again? Others just think it's too late because of what the Cecil is known for. If you just came for the history, now we are here to dive into what really makes this place haunted. The first death that we know of that was documented from the Cecil Hotel was on the evening of January 22nd, 1927. Percy Ormond Cook, 52 years old, shot himself in the head while inside his hotel room after failing to reconcile with his wife and child. The Los Angeles Times reported that he was rushed to the receiving hospital with a slim chance of survival, and death records revealed that he died that same evening. The next was in 1931 when a guest, W.K. Norton, died in his room after taking poison capsules. Throughout the 1940s and 50s, more suicides at the Cecil occurred. September 1932, Benjamin Dodich, he was 25 and shot himself in the head. A maid found him and he did not leave a suicide note. In late July of 1934, former Army Medical Corps Sergeant Borden, Louis D. Borden, who was 53, was found dead in his room at the Cecil. He had slashed his throat with a razor. He left several notes, one of which cited poor health as a reason for it. Grace E. Margot, March 1937. Grace fell from the ninth story window. Her fall was broken by telephone wires, which were wrapped around her body. She later died at the now demolished Georgia Street Receiving Hospital. Police were unable to determine whether her death was the result of an accident or suicide. January 1938, Roy Thompson, who was 35, he was a United States Marine Corps fireman. He jumped from the Cecil's top floor and was found on the skylight of a neighboring building. He had been staying at the Cecil for several weeks. May 1939, Irwin C. Neblett, he was 39. He was a Navy officer who was found dead in his room after ingesting poison. January 1940, Dorothy Seeger, who was 45, she was a teacher and she ingested poison while staying at the Cecil and was reported by the Los Angeles Times to be near death. No further reports were published about her condition. Her death is listed at January 12, 1940. September was sharing a room at the Cecil with her boyfriend, who was a shoe salesman named Ben Levine. He was 38. Dorothy, who had apparently been aware that she was pregnant when she went into labor, she later testified that she did not want to disrupt the sleeping Levine, so she went to the bathroom where she gave birth to a baby boy. Thinking the baby was dead, she threw him out the window and he landed on the roof of a building next to it. Dorothy was charged with murder. Three psychiatrists testified that she was mentally confused at the time of the incident In January of 1945, she was found not guilty by reason of insanity. November 1947, Robert Smith, who was 35, died after jumping from one of Cecil's seventh floor windows. October 22nd, 1954, Helen Gurney, who was 55, was a San Francisco stationery firm employee who jumped from the window of her seventh floor room and landed atop of Cecil's marquee. 1 week prior, she had registered at the hotel under the name Margaret Brown. February 11th, 1962, Julia Frances Moore, who was 50, jumped from the window of her eighth floor room and landed in a second story interior light well. She did not leave a suicide note, and among her possessions were a bus ticket from St. Louis, 59 cents in change, and an Illinois bank book showing a balance of $1,800. October 12th, 1962, Pauline Auten, who was 27 years old, jumped from the window of her ninth floor room after an argument with her estranged husband, Dewey. He had left the room prior, and she jumps and landed on a pedestrian, George Giannini, killing them both instantly. As there was no witnesses, police initially thought that Pauline and George committed suicide together. However, it was soon determined that George had his hands in his pockets at the time of his death, and he was still wearing shoes. Had he jumped, his shoes would have likely fallen off during the fall or upon impact, and his hands would have not been in his pockets. So awful. June 4th, 1964, we have what is known as a murder and not a suicide or self-inflicted. A hotel worker discovered the body of quote-unquote Pigeon Goldie Osgood, who was a retired telephone operator, dead in her room. She had been raped, stabbed, and beaten, and her room was ransacked. She was well known around the area and had earned her nickname because she fed birds in the nearby Pershing Square. Near her body was the Los Angeles Dodgers cap she always wore and a paper sack full of birdseed. Hours after her murder, Jock Ellinger was seen walking through Pershing Square in bloodstained clothing. He was arrested and charged with Osgood's murder, but was later cleared of the crime. The murder remains unsolved. December 20th, 1975, Allison Lowell, who was around 23, was an unidentified woman. She jumped from her 12th floor window onto the Cecil's second floor roof. She had registered into the hotel on December 16th under the name Allison Lowell and was staying in room 327, but it's never been confirmed who she actually was. September 1st, 1992. There's so many suicides that in 2008, two long-term residents referred to the Cecil as the suicide, and it became a popular nickname in social media years later. Room Spook, a website that tracks hotel deaths, lists at least 13 suicides that happened at this hotel. And in addition to suicides, the Cecil's history includes other violence and disturbing happenings. It's also become a notorious spot for adulterous couples, drug activity, and a common ground for sex workers. In 2015, while researching the Cecil Hotel for an article for KCET, a researcher, Hadley Mears, I'm not sure how they pronounce her name, but they claimed that in 1947, Elizabeth Short, yes, also known as the Black Dahlia, was rumored to have been seen drinking at the Cecil's bar in the days before her notorious and unsolved murder. This claim appears to be nothing more than the retelling of a long-forgotten falsehood that first appeared in a column written in the Los Angeles Times in 1995. So this person, quote-unquote, didn't fact-check this claim, but they did write on January 11th, 1947, just 3 days before Elizabeth Short was murdered. She was seen in the bar in the Cecil Hotel with a girlfriend and two sailors. In fact, the hotel and the bar in the same block, including the dugout next door, were some of Elizabeth Short's favorite hangouts during the weeks before she was killed. But according to LAPD records, Short was last seen alive at the Millennium Biltmore Hotel on January 9th and was not seen again until her body was discovered in an empty field on January 15th. There is no known records of Elizabeth Short ever being at the Cecil Hotel. But in the 1980s, however, this has been fact-checked. The hotel had a resident that was a serial killer. He was a regular presence on the Skid Row area of Los Angeles, and according to the hotel clerk, who claims to have spoken to him, says that he is rumored to have stayed at the Cecil for a few weeks, and he may have engaged in part of his killing spree while staying there. On August 30th, 1985, a group of Los Angeles residents spotted him on the streets and prevented him from escaping until police arrived to arrest him. In 1989, he was convicted of 13 murders and sentenced to death by the gas chamber, though he would ultimately die to cancer in 2013 while still awaiting his fate on death row. And if you don't know his whole story or his whole case, I have done episodes on Richard Ramirez in the past. Season 2, which is actually the season I was mentioning beforehand, that is being uploaded to YouTube on Tuesdays. So you can either go back on the podcast and listen to the past episodes, or you can wait for these episodes on YouTube because they will be coming within the next several weeks. It is season 2, episode 7 and 8. It's part 1 and part 2 of Richard Ramirez. His story is quite interesting, but he did talk to the police about how after his killings, he would go to the place where he was staying in these clothes. So it's rumored that he would kill and come back to the Cecil Hotel, and at the time, he would go into the back and walk up the flight of stairs, and he was staying at one of the very top floors, so he would be all bloody and just go up those back stairs. Can you imagine, like, passing him on the stairs and he's just, like, in full-out, bloody, dirty clothes? And he would go up, take those clothes off, shower, and clean up after his murders and stay at the Cecil Hotel. Crazy. Another serial killer, Austrian Jack Unterweger, stayed at the Cecil in 1991, possibly because he was sought to copy Ramirez's crimes. But while there, he strangled and killed at least 3 sex workers for which he was convicted in Austria. But now, the biggest case that you have probably heard of many, many times now that took place at the Cecil Hotel is the insanely mysterious case of Elisa Lam. This case is mind-boggling, honestly. Like, I don't understand. And I feel like it's just, it's one of those cases where I feel like I didn't do the Cecil last year because I was still trying to wrap my head around this. And I still am, but I'm forcing myself to talk about it. I want answers. And I'm so sad that her family doesn't have answers. In 2013, the Cecil at the time was rebranded as the Stay on Main. It was maintaining the original Cecil Hotel sign, or Hotel Cecil sign. But it got a lot of attention when video surveillance came out of a young Canadian student, Elisa Lam. In this video, it's hard to explain like how she's even acting. I will definitely have it linked in today's blog, which is right in the description box for you guys to go check out. I will have photos of the hotel and also links and everything else to these cases as well. But there's video surveillance of her just kind of frantically, like, I don't know, it's almost just like she's having like a panic attack on top of like being very confused, not really knowing where she is at. And you can see her like stepping in and out of an elevator, kind of looking around like she's like watching for somebody. It's very, very strange. It went viral and people were trying to figure out what she was going through, what was going on. And you can see her repeatedly pressing the elevator's buttons, and people have zoomed up, people have torn apart this video, cropped it every way that they could, zoomed up on everything that they could. And what they're saying is that she is hitting the close the door button over and over again, but the doors are not closing. People don't know why she continued to hit these buttons, was kind of like frantic, kind of freaking out, walking in and out of the elevator. And it's possible that she was trying to hide from somebody, because right after this footage, she disappeared and nobody knew where she went. It wasn't until there were complaints from the other residents staying at this hotel of odd tasting water and low water pressure. It's so crazy because at this time, not only did they have Stay on Main that was working as a hotel that you just come and stay a couple days at, you know, but the main part of the Cecil Hotel, they were actually using as like a longer stay. So people were actually like full on living there. So Elisa Lam, she actually, when she first got there, she just got a shared room and she had to stay with, I think, another girl or two. And she was in their room with them. And they said that her behavior was just very, very strange. They ended up reporting it and they got her moved out of their room into a different room. So something was already up. People have said that she was prescribed different medications for different health reasons and that maybe that's why she was very erratic those few days, but she was moved to her own room and out of theirs. And it's really weird how the Cecil is set up. I wonder, like, if they do reopen, how it's going to be, because this portion that was used as like you live there had like rooms with no bathrooms or anything, and they were like shared rooms, and you would have to go out into the hallway and down the hall to like women's bathroom, men's bathroom, and there's like showers and stuff. I don't know. It just sounds like very dangerous to me. Like, I just would not be able to do that. But that's how it was set up. When the other residents started complaining of the water issues, a maintenance worker went up to check the water tanks at the top of the building, where they found her naked body in the water tank. The lid had been closed, so it's a mystery of how her remains ended up in this water tank. One thing that the hotel has gotten a lot of heat for is the fact that the floor that she stayed on was one of the floors that did not have security footage. So we don't know what happened to her after that elevator ride. We don't know if her death was a homicide or if she took her life, or once again, her sister had revealed to detectives that she had a history of not taking her medication. So they didn't know if she was just not responding well to not being on her medication and just happened to end up in the water tank. Among her possessions left at the hotel were several prescription medications, seemingly untouched. She had previously been diagnosed with an extreme form of bipolar disorder, and police ruled that her erratic behavior on the elevator was caused by hallucination. And she stepped into the tank herself, believing that she was in danger. The Los Angeles County coroner ruled her death accidental due to drowning, with bipolar disorder being a significant factor. The mystery still remains because of so many things that different documentaries have pointed out and different researchers that have looked into the case years later. And they're like, this isn't adding up. For one, how did this girl get to the roof by herself? They have showed in videos that the only way to get to the roof is there's one way where there is a door, but like it's locked and it's supposed to be locked unless a maintenance worker unlocks it. So it's like then the hotel's kind of at fault for having that unlocked in the first place. But they said at the time of this, it was locked. So the only other way that she could have gotten up was through a window onto the fire escape and then through a ladder to get to the top, which she could have done. But it's crazy that nobody would have seen her even like going up there. I'm assuming if it was in the middle of the night, though, it would be easy to miss her because she looked to be smaller. The other complaint that people are having with this theory of her doing this herself is the fact that when the maintenance worker went up, he couldn't really remember if the lid was on or off, but ultimately said that it was on and he had to pick the lid off the top, which I'm sure I could go and lift off. But here's the strange thing. Sure, she could have went and picked that lid off, hopped in there, but how did she get the lid back on? It has a lot of people questioning. It's super sad no matter what. I don't know if we'll ever know because police have just kind of ruled this as accidental and that's just kind of the end of it for them. But it is crazy. Like, could have been a hotel worker, could have been the maintenance person. You know, like, you just never know. Like, another person staying at the hotel. Like, It's just crazy that we'll never have answers to this, and it's literally just like a cold case. Like I mentioned before, I don't know. Like, I wonder how things are going to take a turn if and when it is reopened. I feel like, I don't know. I feel like if I was them and I own this place, it would be really hard to reopen it for one thing, because you're just like, it's known for just deaths, murder, suicide. You know, serial killers staying here, all of these things. So it's like, maybe you should like target it to that audience of like true crime or like people who love going and exploring haunted places. Like, sure, you'll get that. There definitely is. Like, there's so many YouTubers and people like that that are wanting to go and like explore haunted places, and they keep trying to get into the Cecil. And then I know that they have. So there is like bodyguards there at night, like watching the place, and they have let some YouTubers come in and film. And it doesn't look like it's changed too much. You still have that elegant old marble-like lobby, and all the rooms are still just very, very out of date, but not much has changed. It just still looks like there's a pause on the construction. I don't know if maybe recently they have started it again or if they are soon. Maybe Stay on Main is coming back. I'm not really sure. I haven't seen too much about this place recently. It's just that it's been literally closed since like 2017. Let me know what you guys think. I am curious to see what they do with it. I know at the same time there was a lot of money at stake and a lot that they're just kind of losing from this building just sitting here, not to mention a building that could have potential to it as well. So I don't know, it's just crazy. Like, I'm always one that's going to stick to like my guns on like wanting to keep historic places. But at the same time, I could never see myself like, yeah, I'm gonna go stay at LA and I'm gonna stay at the Cecil Hotel. I just couldn't see myself doing that. Like, I feel like if I went to the Cecil, it would be like to ghost hunt and then to get the hell out of there. Let me know what you guys think. There is a lot behind the Cecil. If I did miss anything, please let me know. You can find me on Instagram at Caffeine Crime Podcast. Send me a message or comment on the post. And if I missed anything, I would love to add it to the blog so that we're all informed. And, you know, at the end of these seasons, I always do a wrap-up episode. So if I did miss anything from any of these places, I will include it there as well for all of us. I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode, and I hope you guys enjoy spooky season. I have so much fun with these. I love the history of old haunted, spooky places, but I also love diving deeper into like why they're haunted and all the things that have happened there. It definitely makes it a lot spookier and a lot creepier. Thank you for tuning in, and I will see you next week with this current spooky season.
Think you problem solver, well then fucking roll the dice. Feeling pretty pent up when I'm swerving through the night. Got a million bitches and they're trying to hit my line, and I really wanna hit 'em. I ain't got no fucking